announcing that Lieutenant Blake had passed away. But the war finished about 2 weeks later, and that was that. There was no further information or anything about how, why, where, or when. So I was able to tell her about the circumstances of her brother's death. So that got me started, right, on that sort of thing. And so he's buried in a cemetery in Holton in Holland. And as I was standing there, I'll finish this little story, as I was standing there and with my head ringing, which is still ringing, with tinnitus, my old company, B Company, went marching by. And Major Lee, the company commander, said, "Chick, were you in that?" And I said, "Yes, sir. Can I come back to B Company?" He said, "Yeah, I'll arrange it." So that afternoon, I was back with my company, and the war ended a few days later. And that was that.
You're very lucky.
I'm a very lucky person. In a lot of ways, I'm very lucky. Not just that.
So, you know, witnessing firsthand the deaths of friends,
mm-hmm,
and you know, colleagues.
Yeah, I must say that these officers were not friends.
Right.
They are my superiors.
Right.
Yeah.
But witnessing this firsthand, you know, when you're involved in a ceremony, mm-hmm, or Remembrance Day,
yes,
do these things, are they in the front of your mind?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. Yeah. But a very nice thing happened at the official cemetery, or the official ceremony at Bretville-sur-Lays. Our Lieutenant Governor, Adrian Clarkson, was there. And I was showing the picture of the wedding, Joe Legere with me, to the widow of a officer friend of mine, and I was crying, and Adrian came over, and I knew her slightly because she has a cottage north of Toronto near Parry Sound where my daughter lives, so I knew her through that. And she said, "Chick, what's the matter?" And so I showed her the picture, which made me feel even worse. And she gave me a big hug, and I thought, what a wonderful person Adrian Clarkson is. Have you ever read her book?
I haven't.
It's a beautiful book, yeah.
And I think it's, you know, for others who haven't experienced war, it's the it's hearing the personal stories like this that.
Well, that's why I'm doing this.
Yes.
Yeah. I know that my uncle would never talk about most of the experiences he had in World War I. After I came back from overseas, he never asked me about my experiences because he knew what I was going through. Do you know, when I came back from World War II and I was stationed in St. John, New Brunswick, I felt very uncomfortable walking any place except on a sidewalk, because of the danger of stepping on a mine. It took me years before I gave up that feeling. Mm-hmm. I've got to watch where I step. Because
yes.
I had a company commander, Captain Sharp, who stepped on a mine, and I should have been killed in that.
So that stayed with you for a long time?
Forever.
Was there a time when it was difficult for you to talk about your experiences?
To
talk about your experiences?
Yes, yeah. It was after this project from UVic, when David Ganser was interviewing me over a period. He came out to my... I had a diving store. I was in the diving business after I got out of the Army. I had a store in Sydney, and he came to my store. He lived in Sydney, and he came to my store over a period of 2 or 3 months, and we went through all this. But that was from start to finish. That was 34 years of service that he talked about, yeah. And that was the first time I'd really ever talked about it to anyone.
Did you feel, how did you feel talking about it for the first time like that?
Well, there's two things. Even now, just talking to you, I feel very sad, particularly talking about my friend. And I feel I've got to be careful. I don't want to sound as if I'm bragging or trying to make myself into a super warrior or something like that. I'm not, just a simple soldier.
You're trying to tell things accurately.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
Would you like to talk a little bit about Korea?
Okay. Do you want to turn off your machine and I'll show you some pictures?
Okay, let's do that. Let's put this on pause. So thanks for sharing the photographs with me. Those are amazing pictures of your experience in Korea, and very rare pictures as well. Now you say those are, the photographs are with the National War Museum?
Yes. If you ever go to the National War Museum in Ottawa, ask to see the Major Charles Goodman collection.
Yeah. Very nice. Yeah. Well, they must have been very pleased to get those.
Yes.
Tell me a bit about your experience in Korea.
Well, I went to Korea as a reinforcement officer. I had been a sergeant in New Brunswick, and I was training reserve soldiers and cadets in New Brunswick, and they needed new officers, and so there's a program throughout the Canadian Army of getting battle experienced officers from the ranks. And so I went to Camp Borden in the summer of 1951, and there was about 30 of us from all over Canada who were going to be commissioned as officers. We were sergeants, staff sergeants, and a couple warrant officers. It soon became apparent when we got to Camp Borden that we knew as much about soldiering as the people who were trying to teach us to become officers. So the course was shortened considerably, and after about 3 or 4 weeks, we were told that we had all graduated and that we were being posted. Much to my surprise, I was posted to the Royal 22nd Regiment, French Canadian Regiment, although my French was virtually nil. And there were other English-speaking officers whose French was nil when we went. So we got to Quebec City and posted to the 1st Battalion of the Royal 22nd Regiment, and we were sent to Laval University to learn French. And on the Friday of, I should say that of the three of us, or two buddies and myself, we had known each other for a long time, we were very qualified parachutists. And that was a rarity in the Vandoos at that time. So we were expecting to go up to Labrador on a winter exercise, parachute exercise. And the duty officer came in on Friday after being in school for a week and said, "Lieutenants Goodman, Burkowski, and Jeffries report to the adjutant of the 1st Battalion." And just for a joke, I said, "Oh, where are we going, Korea?" Because I thought we were going to Labrador to arrange this exercise. And he said, "Yes." The teacher broke into tears. She was losing three of her students to go to Korea. So that was a bit of a surprise. And we went back. Luckily, at that time, I had a wife, but no children. And so we were going to move to Quebec City. I had to cancel the movement of my furniture from Fredericton to Quebec City, and I should have probably also add, my wife was about 2 months pregnant at the time. And so we arranged for her to go back to Fredericton, where her friends were. And we took off, and they needed us in a hurry, so we took a train to Edmonton, to the reinforcement depot. We flew from there to Vancouver and flew commercial air from Vancouver to Japan in a lap of comfort. Not everybody who went there was so fortunate. Anyway, we spent about 3 weeks in Japan being oriented to the war in Korea and doing some toughening up, although I thought we were pretty tough to start with. And we went to Korea, and we were sent to the 2nd Battalion of the Royal 22nd Regiment. Eddie went to another company. Jeff and I both went to A Company of the 2nd Battalion as platoon commanders. I had a very experienced sergeant who had been in World War II with the Maisonneuve Regiment. His English was excellent. All my corporals spoke good English. Many of the men spoke none. So I was determined to learn French, and my sergeant and I tried to speak French as often as possible without me mixing things up too much. We were in the front line facing the Samichon River. Most of the action was repulsing Chinese attack. And the Chinese were excellent soldiers. Their field craft was first class. In daylight, they could sneak up to our first lines of defense and spend all day there and then attack us at night. And sometimes it was vice versa. And we wouldn't know it until they started firing. We did a lot of night patrols, particularly down in the valley to the Samichon River and sometimes across to the Chinese lines. I had replaced an officer who had been killed in a position, not the same one, but in a similar position. I can't think of his name at the moment, but evidently he had been well thought of by particularly the sergeant. And so I did that job for, I guess, about 6 months until the 2nd Battalion was due to come home. And there's a number of us left over who hadn't completed a full year in Korea. So I went to Divisional Headquarters, Commonwealth Divisional Headquarters, as a liaison officer. And during that time, I spent much of it being the liaison officer to the 1st Marine Division, which is on the flank of the Commonwealth, left flank of the Commonwealth Division. And I got to know the Marines very well. Went on an assault landing with them on the island of Tochok Do off the coast of Korea. And eventually the 1st Battalion had some casualties amongst their officers. My 3 months at Divisional Headquarters was up, and I went back to the battalion, but I was made second in command of a company. And I was very proud of myself, because the second in command of a company is usually a captain. I was a second lieutenant. And it was a great job. I enjoyed it very much, and I know I did a good job, because I got a big thank you from the best company commander in all of the battalions of the Royal 22nd Regiment. That was Major Harry Pope. And I flew back home, again commercial, and I got, let's go back. Well, I was still the liaison officer. I was standing on top of a hill one day when an officer from the brigade headquarters came running up. He says, "I have a message for Second Lieutenant Goodman." I thought, oh, what's this? I opened it up, and it was from my wife, who said, we now have a baby daughter, born on the 5th of June. Now, I was floored. And so now that I was on my way back home, flew back to Canada, I didn't have to take a slow troop ship, but I took a slow train across Canada, and when I got to Fredericton Junction, my wife was there with the car and the daughter, who is now 6 months old.
Oh.
Yeah, what a treat. Yeah, that was a big thrill. So I didn't realize that it would take so long. I never even gave it a thought of ever going back to Korea until just before I retired, I was given the opportunity to go back to Korea as part of an official party. And a friend of mine, strangely enough, had served in the South Saskatchewan Regiment with him and was also had also been commissioned, same time I was, and went to Korea, although I didn't serve with him in Korea. And so we had a great time. I rented a car, and a day we didn't have part of the official ceremonies, and an old sergeant and I drove up to where the old front lines were, and they're still the front lines, with the Koreans looking at their northern neighbors across a few miles of barbed wire. And that was quite a sight. The celebrations we had were monstrous. They were not a monstrosity, but they were this large, huge, in Seoul, and there must have been 10,000 people in the stands. And the Korean Army did some parachute displays, marching on this big parade square, and we are in seats of honor, those of us there, from the troops that took part in the war. And there was, I guess, probably 25 or 30 of us from Canada, but there was also British troops, New Zealand, and so on. Now, one of the my friends had been badly wounded in Korea, and we thought we saw the last of him when he went off to the field hospital, which was run by the Norwegians, and it was called NorMash. You've seen MASH on the radio. It was nothing like that, believe me. The MASHes weren't like that. That's a story. But the Norwegian MASH, Mobile Army Surgical Hospital, was all staffed by Norwegians. And they did a triage. Are you familiar with triage?
Yes.
Okay, well, they did a triage, and they said, this guy's not going to make it. And they put a little tag on his toe, and after everybody else was treated, they brought him in, and he survived. He kept that tag. And he had it with him when we went back to Korea. When we went to the hotel where we stayed, beautiful hotel, downtown Seoul, lo and behold, the whole Norwegian MASH staff was there. Doctors and nurses, the whole lot of them, they were all there. So he took out, we were having a reception in the hotel, he took out this tag and he announced, he said, there's Lieutenant so-and-so here. And this nurse put up her hand and said, I'm her. What do you want? He said, I want to prove to you that you are wrong. I lived. She broke down in tears. Uh-huh. And what an experience.
Yes. What an experience.
Yeah. Anyhow, they became the best of friends.
Did they?
Yeah. And so that to me was one of the highlights of that trip. We did go up to the Cap Yong Memorial, which was a PPCLI battle, where they are awarded the U.S. Presidential Unit Citation for their heroism. I was not part of PPCLI at that time. I was with the Bandus. We also went out to Panmunjom to see the area of the truce talks and so on. And that's kind of sad because it doesn't look any different than it did 50 years prior. And they're no closer to solving all that than they were now. It's no closer to solving all that than it was in 1950 when all that started. We went to Busan to see the Canadian cemetery there and had a big ceremony. I didn't know many of the people in there, a few. One name was the name of the officer I replaced who had been killed in action in Korea. And unfortunately, I can't remember his name. I never knew him, but I did know the name for a long time. And there are a few other people that I had known who were killed in Korea. I went to visit my nephew in Oakville a few years ago, and he took me around to see the Canadian Korea Memorial, and I was quite impressed. And again, I found that officer's name there.
So all of the names from the cemetery are
all the names from the cemetery are there. The bodies aren't there, but the names are. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not likely many people get to Korea, so it's interesting that we have the thing there. So that was my Korean experience.
Yeah. How did you feel seeing the name of the person you replaced? He was killed in action, was he?
He was killed in action, yeah, in the front line. Well, I don't know how I felt. I didn't know the person. I felt I knew quite a bit about him because my platoon sergeant had been his platoon sergeant, and the platoon sergeant and the platoon commander live together in a dugout. They live in each other's pocket, so to speak. And I was very lucky. I had a good one. I was a green officer, and he helped me a lot, taught me a lot too. So I can't express any feelings about that. I did know one officer who had been sent to Canada during World War II, and he went to Rossay Collegiate School, and that's how I knew him. Not that I went to Rossay Collegiate School. My son did, but I didn't. And he stayed in Canada. He was sent one of these to get them out of the air raids and so on. So he stayed in Canada and joined the Army. He landed in Korea a few months after I did with the Royal Canadian Regiment, and he was standing on top of a hill looking around, and a shell landed and killed him his first day in action. So I saw his grave, and I, as I say, I knew him in Busan, and of course I saw his name on the wall at the Canadian Cemetery. It's interesting that there are some graves in the Canadian cemetery now of Korean veterans who want to be buried there.
Right. Now they're in front of the Wall of Remembrance?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to go in God's Acre down. You know where God's Acre is?
No.
Let's see. I can't remember. Lamson Street. You know where Lamson Street is?
Yes.
In the Esquimalt?
Yes.
And you know where the Naval Hospital is there?
Mm-hmm.
And you know where the golf course is around the corner?
Yeah.
Right in the middle of that golf course is God's Acre. And it was the Naval Cemetery, started when the Royal Navy was in Victoria. And they buried some of their sailors there who died. And you should go someday. It's very interesting. There are graves dating back to the 1800s. Those old ones, able seaman so-and-so, who fell off a yardarm was killed when he hit the deck. Able-bodied so-and-so who drowned in Esquimalt Harbor. And so they give a little story in some of the old ones. Well, after World War I, if you passed away, Department of Veterans Affairs took over the cemetery and made arrangements for veterans could be buried in their wish. Unfortunately, it's getting kind of crowded in there now, and I'm not sure they're taking bodies. They'll take ashes, I know for sure. So I'm not sure about a body. And so Nancy and I are going to go in there. If she dies before me, then she can't go in until I go. So I'm going to keep her ashes on the mantle right over there. And then when I go, I'll take her ashes with me. But if I go first, then she knows all the drill of how to get me in there.
It's something you talk about together.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, it's a very interesting cemetery, and
I'd like to visit.
Been part of a funeral party of taking a number of friends in there. It's interesting, to get there you have to cross one of the fairways, and so you have to look this way and that way.
It's
right inside the Gorge Road Cemetery.
Golf course.
Huh? Gorge Road Golf Course, yeah. Oh. It's right in front, right in the middle of it. I think that they should find some other land someplace and tell the Gorge Road, look, you can put hole 19 over there and give us another acre for God's acre, so it'll be God's 2 acres.
Right. Yeah. Now, Remembrance Day was, 10 days ago now. But
yes.
What did you do on Remembrance Day?
Well, I've been to Remembrance services in Saanich, where I used to live over near Mount Doug, and downtown Victoria. And so after I got out of the Army, I started a diving business in Sydney, made a lot of friends out here, and I knew a lot of people. I was president of the Chamber of Commerce at one time in Sydney, and decided I'd like to move out here someday, which I have now done. So I go to the services there, and I moved my Legion membership from Britannia branch to out here. And so I like going to a smaller one that's more intimate. And for a number of years I've been going every Remembrance Day ceremony. And this year we were blessed with quite a nice day. The sun actually shone mostly. We fell in over near the Bodine Charlie White theater there, and then marched down the main street around to in front of the municipal hall where the Moore Memorial is. We stopped and faced, and there's a huge crowd out. And again, one of the neat things is that you know most of the people. It's a small town. And so there's always people shouting, "Hi, Chick, well done," things like that. So it's quite personal. And then they read off the names from the World War I and World War II and Korean, and now peacekeeping and so on.
They read out the names
of the local people.
Okay.
Yeah. And their names are engraved on the War Memorial. And then they have the service. And we have the helicopter squadron are there in uniform. The Army and the Air Force and Navy cadets are there. The cadet bands play. And it's quite a moving ceremony. The local dignitaries are there. None of the provincial ones or federal ones, but the local ones. And so we all know each other. And then after the ceremony and the placing of wreaths, we march up the street and are down a couple blocks and come around. And the senior person present takes the salute in front of the War Memorial. And then we go over to the Army-Navy-Air Force Club You know where it is with the tank and the
peacekeeping
thing there. And we all go in and have some sandwiches and a hot toddy. So it's a nice day.
Is that something you look forward to?
Yes. Yes, indeed. Yeah. I also volunteer at the Naval and Military Museum in the dockyard. Have you ever been in that?
I haven't yet. I've been meaning to go there.
Yeah. Well, if you'd like a personal tour, contact me and I'll take you around and show it to you.
I'd like that very much.
Yeah. So myself and a friend are docents there. Usually we only go when we're taking classes, school classes through. But if you'd like to do that, certainly. If you want to bring your kids with you, that'd be just great.
Okay.
Just let me know and we can meet there and take you around and give you a personal tour of the place.
That'd be very nice.
Yeah.
And you noticed it was quite a good crowd for the Remembrance Day.
Yes,
service.
The veterans are becoming fewer and fewer, of course, as the years go on. And the crowds are getting larger and larger. Yeah, I'm quite surprised, and it's nice to have people clap as you're walking by. And I had a very interesting thing happen. I had parked my truck up by the the Bodine Center there, and the parking lot, and then we marched away from there. Parked my truck there, so after finishing at the Army Navy Air Force Club, Nancy had taken the car down, so she came back by car, and I was walking back to the truck. And I was walking up, this car pulled over, and the guy leaned out the far side of the window, and I thought he was going to ask for directions, so I walked over the window and said, "Yes, can I help you?" And he said, "Yes. Are you a World War II veteran?" I said, "Yes." And he said, "Can I shake your hand?" I looked at him surprised. I said, "Sure." And shook him. And I said, "What's the story behind that?" And he said, "Well, I was too late for the parade. And my father-in-law is visiting. And when I go home, I want to tell him that I shook a veteran's hand today." And wasn't that nice?
It's very similar to your experiences in 94 in France.
Oh,
as well.
Yes, of course. Yeah.
Same sort of
yes.
People wanting to reach out to you.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your memories with me today.
Yeah.
Appreciate that. We
could do this for a month.
We could. There'd be many more questions I'd like to talk to you about, and maybe we can do that again too.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay, if you turn this thing off now.
Okay. Oh, I'll just before I turn it off, I'll just have you sign the release form. And what this does is allows
me
to speak.
You've got a file of them full of there with my name on it.
Just along this line here.
You can put it in.
Okay. Thank you very much again, sir.
Okay.